Okay, thanks for a wonderful workshop here. So today I will talk about some non-standard dark matter. I will also discuss how this type of dark matter is formed. And I will focus on one specific formation scenario, but there may be some other formation scenario which we discuss more during this program. Okay, so first of all, for the ordinary matter, so there are many different types. We have a sun, we have a rock, and we have a building. So it's everywhere. It's very diverse. Okay, so that means make us to wondering like dark matter may not be just a simple particle. So dark matter maybe can be also built up from some elementary particles and. Become some large scale and bigger object, for example, maybe become dark planets, dark star, for example. So that's kind of the focus of this talk. Basically, definition, quote unquote definition of microscopic dark matter is a composite state that may contain many dark matter particles in that state. And its mass could be much, much heavier than even than Planck's mass scale, for example, or could be lighter than Planck scale. But I just use Planck scale just trying to distinguish from ordinary particle dark matter models. And also, because it's heavy, and so the Lambert density is very small, so that means that generically, its detection could be dramatically from ordinary wimp search, for example. So that also changes how we search for this type of model. Okay, so there are many recent... yes, please.
Quick question. So for dark matter, keep it composite objects, obviously, that's what you're talking about. Are there states of ordinary matter that you could construct macroscopic states of ordinary matter in the early universe that could evade, say, CMB constraints and so on? Black hole being one example. But is there anything else that you could construct out of ordinary matter that would escape sort of CMB constraints?
So wonderful. So that would be the first thing I will discuss. So. Okay, so recently there are lots of some interest. But most of the earlier study, like 2014, people study how individual dark matter particles and group together, so that there may be some attractive force. So they maybe form some bound states, then keep add more particles. So that's why sometimes people call it like dark nuclei, for example. So later on, there are some other like symmetric dark matter ligands. There are some dark blobs, and also how to detect those type of dark matter models. But in this talk, I will concentrate on two examples which I have been working on, so I will give you two example models. So the first one, which is the quark ligands, to answer the Mustafa's question, and that will be one example of dark matter made of. Or standard model particles, for example. After that, I will talk about like a dark quark ligands, and which in some sense it's easier, but on the other hand, it's less long. So there are many uncertainties because you don't know what the dark sector is. After that, I will talk about a very very simple dark matter model from Lagrangian point of view, and for that model, and you can have the dark matter, this microscopic dark matter, energy density to be like an electroweak scale. And you can see that we could use the energy density of the object to categorize, to distinguish different type of microscopic dark matter. For example, you can have an ordinary QCD. So if you think about the neutron star or nuclei, the energy density is a QCD scale, roughly speaking. But if you have some dark QCD, then you can have some arbitrary density, for example. But electroweak scale is another well-known scale, so that's why I just feel like maybe there is a chance that dark matter state has a very, very high density and electroweak density. So that is another benchmark model point, and we maybe should focus, pay some attention to that. And after that, there are some other things that I would like to talk about, for example, the QCD Xn star, primordial black hole, and also dark monopole, for example. So there are some other ways to construct like a topological dark matter state. And, then I will discuss a little bit about the detection. So the detection, it's a little bit challenging in the sense to come up with brand new ideas to search for this type of models. But I will discuss some scenario which have some chance to have some new data, for example, to probe the parameter space. Okay, so let me first talk about the quark ligands, which is the question is exactly Vostava asked, can we explain, for example, in the standard mode, can we explain dark matter? For so that kind of question is a kind of obvious question, and people tried to answer that question, like including famous paper like this. Basically, point out that there could be some invisible quark ligands providing an explanation for dark matter in terms of QCD effects, which means you can potentially explain dark matter pure in the standard model, and you don't need the new physics. And basically, they point out that this kind of quark matter can have energy per baryon less than, for example, proton energy, or even less than iron nucleus per baryon energy, which is 938. So there are lots of studies in the late 80s, for example, and also beginning of 90s about this quark ligands. So let me just give you a little bit of refresh what's a quark matter. And so the iron, we know that is the lowest, roughly speaking, lowest mass per baryon state, which is around 930 MeV. Okay. But we know the proton mass is 909. It's a little bit heavier than this mass, right? So the so-called quark matter basically is like instead of the vacuum in the confinement vacuum, and there could be some state which is in the QCD deconfining phase. So in instance, that in that state you can use like an approximate degenerate Fermi gas. You can ask what is the mass per baryon state. So what I'm plotting here, let's look at first the left panel. So this is, let's just turn off the QCD gauge coupling because it's unconfining. The QCD can be, gauge coupling can be treated as perturbative. So that's just some perturbative correction to the property of the of this state. And you can ask what is the mass per baryon as a function of this kind of a bag parameter. So this bag parameter, roughly speaking, is a measure of the vacuum energy difference inside this object or outside of the object. For instance, you have a QCD confining, you have QCD unconfining, there is a vacuum energy difference. That is the parameter called control the vacuum energy difference. So you can see, let's just take some benchmark point, let's say 150 MeV for the bag parameter, then you have this mass per baryon will be like 859 MeV. So that means this could be dramatically lower than the iron energy per baryon mass, right? And what I'm showing here, different lines, for example, will be like, for this state, you have a three flavor of quark, up quark, down quark, and a strange quark, and also how much you put leptons, electrons, for example, to neutralize the charge, for example. So that's the slightly different change in the upper range. Those horizontal, roughly speaking. So the simple answer for this is earlier calculation, trying to show the lowest energy per baryon state in our standard mode QCD may not be nucleus, could be a quark matter. So this statement is true, independent of whether you can produce this state or not, whether you can produce this state in the laboratory or in the early universe. But the existence of the potential quark matter state, that could be true. Okay, continue. So since that state can exist, but the formation of that state from early universe or even in the current laboratory require a little bit of long standard scenario. So one scenario which people talk about, or in Witten's paper, is talk about from the first order phase transition, basically cook water and generate bubbles, and you keep tracking how the bubble forms. So basically, at a very high temperature, you say you have a quark gluon plasma, and you're very hot, and just a quark and the gluon. And at the phase transition temperature, then you start to have the hydronic bubble, hydronic phase, and pop out of the vacuum. And that bubble and can grow because you keep lower the temperature, that energetically, that bubble is preferred. And those hydronic bubble, they can grow. And when they grow, then there are a few bubbles they can overlapping with each other. And they can also kind of surrounding some unconfining phase, for example. So instance, the confining phase will be surrounded by hydronic bubble. And at some point, you can see the hydronic bubble occupy majority or one half of the volume of the space. And you just turn around, you see that the environment is mainly hydronic phase, and the quark gluon plasma phase will become like isolated regime. So then that regime potentially can have some non-trivial state exist under a condition if you have some conserved quantum number for that, that state, for example, inside of that pocket, then you maybe can have that one. So in the earlier days, people calculated what is the generic size of the quark matter at the phase transition temperature. Roughly speaking, would be the Hubble at the phase transition temperature, two orders of magnitude, that would be roughly speaking the size of the quark matter. And the number of baryons inside of one quark matter bubble would be like a very large number, like 10 to 38, whatever, that's some huge number. And you can also keep tracking how those pocket, unconfinement pocket or quark matter evolves as the temperature drops. As temperature drops, and those pressure, the vacuum pressure will push this red region, and it will shrink the size. And at some point, you shrink, but inside here, you have the quarks. Quark is a fermions, so then there is a degenerate fermion pressure. And at some point, they reach to balance, then they stop. Then they become the current approximately zero temperature quark matter or quark luggage. And you can use in some thermodynamics to estimate what's the radius, what's the size, what's the mass. So you can go through that calculation. So roughly speaking, you will have the number density or the lumber density will be like a, or then energy density will be like a generic QCD scale, 150 MeV. The mass of the quark luggage will be like a 10 to 14 gram, some generic size. Then there's some uncertainty about the calculation of the radius of the of this quark matter will be like 1 meter, millimeter, centimeter. Generic, but the simple way you can think about this type of object is like you can think about it as like a neutron star, but a micro neutron star, like a 10 to minus 6 times the actual neutron star radius. So that would be this object mass and the density. Yes.
So in this process of bubble formation and then them squeezing it together, presumably when the bubbles actually grow, they're growing quite rapidly. They crash into each other, and then there's collision between them. Does that energy not disrupt these sort of nuggets? I mean, do you still get a significant, because there's a lot of energy that's coming through when they're crashing.
Yes,
it's not like they're just getting squeezed and they're squeezing, right? They're coming through and crashing.
Yes. That's a potential concern. So maybe you have the bubble crossing, then there will be maybe some shock wave, for example. So shock wave maybe distract the object. So, but it's hard to think about all those objects can be destroyed, right? Because you have a 10 to some big number of baryons, you maybe disrupt it into small pieces, but it's hard to say you totally disrupt into become a baryonic state, you see, because you need a, what I mean is that it's hard to change the phase in that object from unconfining phase to the confining phase. And so you maybe change the characteristic size and the mass, but you will not change the generic existence of the, yes.
So if I'm understanding correctly, it's basically once these things become fairly supported, then now they're in the lower energy state.
Yes.
Now they're stable. But as they're contracting, I mean, the true hadronic state is still lower energy. So why don't you get hadronic bubbles within or,
you know, I see. So for this question, yeah, indeed, there are some study about that. So you can ask, oh, how about I also inside this red region, I have a hadronic bubble. So that depending on the tension, and so certain tension can make those inside the inner bubbles like shrink instead of grow. So people also, yeah, studied
so
those.
It's possible if you've got some kind of maximum size that then that it's stable even before it becomes.
Yes. Yeah.
So just from energetics, related to the first question, so just from energetics, the bubble is stable, is it correct? It's not propagating through... Can you elaborate a bit more about instability? So for example, inside the neutron star, if it's possible, if you insert a seed, you can have a quark-based transition that will propagate throughout the whole star, depends on energetics and so on. So, but this is stable, right?
This is stable, yeah.
So this is just an energetics?
It's just energetics, and also, yeah. Also depending on the size, depending on the tension, and there's some uncertainty in the calculation. And also, there are some other stability calculation people talk about. For example, I may have an energetic outside particle, like a neutrino, for example, and that may be kick out some baryons outside, for example. So if those processes become very efficient, eventually you can have some process decrease the baryon number of this object. So and indeed, there are lots of study back then. Okay. But let me continue. So if this is a story, so we should just work on this, and we should not work on any other dark matter model, because this is the best way to link the dark matter energy density to the ordinary baryon energy density, because they all come from the same dark baryon asymmetry, right? So you don't need to do any more complicated model building for that. But it turns out that in the QCD, for example, the first assumption is you need like a first order QCD phase transition, for example, right? So at that time, like 84, so people don't know whether QCD phase transition in the early universe is a first order or not. But after like a QCD, lattice QCD, there's a simulation, and the people kind of know that the so-called phase diagram of the QCD. So in the x-axis is the chemical potential, in the y-axis is the temperature, and you can see there is an ending point. So instance, you need the chemical potential to be above like 350 MeV, then that in that region is the first order phase transition. And below that, if your chemical potential is not large enough, then the phase transition from the quark-gluon plasma to hydronic phase is just a crossover. And so our universe, the ordinary universe, we assume like a tiny asymmetry, right? So the baryon asymmetry, and we are kind of in this trajectory. So we're not in the first order phase transition region, we're in the crossover. So this leaves some kind of interesting questions. How can we change the early universe and make the QCD first order, for example? So if you can do that in some lateral way, you maybe can also revive those quark ligands as a dark matter candidate, for example. But that is a little bit non-trivial model building. For example, you could think about, my strange quark, for example, and gets its mass below the QCD phase transition, and you can do some flavor model building, for example. But it's not pretty, because the flavor constraint is also very stringent. Anyway, but let me continue. So there is another way to look at the phase diagram. Basically, you can plot in terms of the strange quark mass and also the up quark and the down quark mass. So if all the three quarks, the three lighter flavors, they are massless, suppose. Look at this corner. So that would be the first order phase transition. So instance, if you have a three massless flavor for our QCD, and the first that would be first order phase transition. Or the other way around, suppose you decouple all those three flavors. Instance, you have a pure gluonic QCD, right? So no quarks. That would be also first order phase transition. But unfortunately, our standard model sets in some middle point. The strange quark is a little bit slightly heavy, such that we don't have a first order phase transition. Okay, so there is some general argument based on like R.G. Rani, and people can estimate that the first order, the phase transition is the first order if all your quarks are massless, for example. So there are some Sarsky and Wilczek argument. For example, there are also some lattice simulation tell us that, or if you choose like some color equals to 3, the number of massless flavor is 4, for example, you can still have the first order phase transition throughout even small chemical potential, for example. So that means that generically, even our QCD, for some reason, is unlucky to have a first order phase transition. But if you think about it broadly, you think about, I have some arbitrary number of color, number of flavor, so generically, there could be much larger range of QCD-like theory give us a first order phase transition. Yes.
What are the boundaries of this region? So this blue line enters this mu and d mass square. It's like by which masses?
You mean here?
Right, here or the lower bottom.
Yeah. Over here, okay. So they didn't put it here, they didn't put it in this scale, right? So let me see. The strange quark, depending on, it's around like 50 MeV, 200 MeV. So that will give you that will be this physical parameter, right? So that will be that's give a sense of probably like 50 MeV. That will be the order of the boundary of those curves.
So what if let's say there are some big fluctuations of heat from whatever reasons. So okay. to increase somewhere locally the masses of light, so you will be able to be maybe on the top of the boundary is how high?
Oh, that would be, you need those bare quark mass to be above the QCD scale, let's say above like a 200 or 300 MeV, then you treat it as heavy quark, then that is the boundary, roughly speaking. So yeah, I agree. So, but you needed to do that in a much larger volume to have some fancy stuff out, right? So not just a tiny object. Yeah. Yes.
I was going to ask the same question.
Okay. Let me keep going. So that's kind of brings me to the second part, which is dark quark luggage. So which means like what I said, like generically, if you don't care about our standard model QCD, I talk about some hidden QCD, some dark QCD, then you can look at what is this number of color and the number of flavor. So here the flavor is defined to be massless flavor. Okay, so no mass, no bare mass. And then you can ask what is the region and to have a first order phase transition, for example. It's pretty large region, so which is those points here. So what I'm showing here is like if the number of flavor is above 3, generically we anticipate that to be first order phase transition. And up to some region, there is some conformal window. And there are some points like first, those points, they have been confirmed by lattice simulation. Okay. So that means generically, if we think about a hidden sector, generically we can anticipate there's some large parameter region or theory space, then we can have a first order phase transition. Okay. So that means that we could apply those quark luggage, our standard model QCD quark luggage calculation into the dark QCD calculation. Okay, so then we don't need to repeat all those bubble, just to give you some generic sense. So
excuse me,
yes.
So that's innate as long as you don't have masses for
that's right. Yes.
Quarks, right?
That's right, yes. That's a counting of the number of flavor. Okay.
Otherwise you would close somehow
right.
The space.
Yes,
there, right?
Yeah, yes.
You're going to talk about observational constraints later.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So basically, you can have the first order phase transition for some generic dark QCD model. So then you can have the chemical potential to be small. You still can have a chance when you pass it through this boundary of the phase or temperature phase transition. You have some region which you can just form dark baryons, for example, dark hydrons. But you can also have some other region. For example, you can form the dark quark luggage, for example, and you can also estimate which one is the lower energy per dark baryon state, and there are some conditions like compare the Bagge parameter versus the number of flavor, also the baryon mass, for example. So there are some generic conditions you can estimate that. Okay, so then you can also kind of map out what is the required parameters to satisfy the 100% of dark matter using the dark quark luggage, for example. So generically, we need to assume some asymmetric baryon, dark baryon asymmetry, for example. So that's the y-axis, and the x-axis is like a dark baryon mass. And generically, the dark baryon mass is related to the dark QCD scale. And so generally, you can also think about this is dark QCD scale. And you can see that depending on the dark confinement scale, and if you go to a higher scale, then you need a even smaller asymmetric value to match the 100% of the dark matter. And what I'm showing here is also at some point, if your confinement scale is too high, like order 100 TeV, and you need also worry about the thermal freeze out of the dark baryon. And the thermal part will also become important because when you increase the dark baryon scale or mass, the annihilation of the dark baryon antibaryon become inefficient. So then you have the relic abundance for the dark baryon antibaryon from thermal part is become large. So that sets a little bit upper range on what's the confinement scale you can anticipate should be below like 100 TeV scale. But below that, you can have a wider range. And after that, there is one more thing before I talk about the generic size of the dark quark luggage, is like you also worry about the darker radiation. So let's think about this sector is pure dark, right? Not thermalized to us. And once you have the confinement, you generate dark pions, for example. Those dark pions could be massless because we assume that bare quark mass, dark quark mass is zero. So that will be contributed to a dark radiation. So here, just trying to say that depending on at the same B temperature, whether this is confining or not confining, let's say, suppose it's confining, and then you generically anticipate the dark sector temperature should be lower if you want to satisfy some Planck constraint, for example. But it's not terribly lower. You just need like order 0.5 lower compared to our temperature, for example. So that's another correlated dark radiation one should take into account when we talk about those hidden dark sector. Okay. Oh, so after that, we can talk about what is the dark quark lattice mass as a function of the dark QCD phase transition temperature, for example. And you can see that here we plot from KeV confinement scale to 100 TeV, for example. And depending on this sigma tilde, so the sigma tilde is a parameter to parameterize the tension of the bubble. Okay, so when you do those phase transition, so you probably know what I'm talking about. So then there is some high dependence power, like 9 over 2 power, depending on the tension of the bubble. And so that generates a little bit of uncertainty about the dark quark lattice mass calculation. But generally, you can see that if the confinement scale is very low, like 10 keV or keV, you can get a very heavy dark quark lattice mass, like 10 to 24 gram, for example. But if it's a very high scale confinement, then you get a very, very small mass, for example, and you get a 10 to 16 GeV, for example. So that's kind of but generically, suppose you don't know the confinement scale, this can vary very wide range of mass. Yes.
I have a question about why the things are stable. I mean, if I boil water, that's the first order phase transition, no matter how I boil it, I don't expect droplets of water to be remaining. So yes. What's the difference with this phase transition? Yes.
So there is a crucial assumption, which is there is a baryon number, conserved baryon number. So for this case, we have dark baryon number, which is a good symmetry. In sense, the bubble contains some conserved very large dark baryon number, which is different from the water case. Okay, so that can forbid you to totally shrink the bubble.
There must be some sort of baryon for violation for it to split into two phases or something?
So that one is assumed. In a sense, there is some initial chemical potential for the baryon number and or symmetry for the baryon number. That some UV physics give you that. And then you have the late baryon, but not the anti-baryon. And that baryon state will survive.
So you would need to have dark baryogenesis?
Yes. So which is... here, put it by hand, and so there's some asymmetric dark baryon number. And in the standard model, we also have a baryon number of symmetry, but we also put it by hand, for example, in the quark lattice I was talking about, in the QCD.
Why is the standard scheme of decay in just, let's say, neutrons, like black neutrons?
Oh, so that's an energetic argument, right? So basically, you care about what is the lowest energy per baryon state. So that's the state I was talking about at the beginning. If you can justify that is this dark quark matter state is the lowest energy per baryon state, then that will be okay. You will never have to.
Because there is baryon number conservation, this would be a quite different phase order transition then. It's more going to be like, you know, like fourth order diffusion equation. Like in a lot of solid states where you transport not directly the order parameter, but rather like, you know, diffuse across. So in fact, it actually might be more interesting than just simple bubble formations.
I not 100% digest what you're talking about here.
So let's say example I know well is from second order phase transitions. So let's say I have second order phase transition. I can have domain walls and I can immediately interchange, let's say, magnetic field orientation. For then it could be that I cannot interchange direct order parameters, but I could diffuse across. And then rather than having essentially like, you know, annealing type equation, you would have annealing where the order, when the conserved quantity is getting transported, right? And it looks different.
It's different from that. Anyway.
So I'm not sure what will happen in the first order.
Yeah, I'm not sure about how important of the effects you were talking about for the first order phase machine.
Yeah.
Okay, we can discuss more about that. Okay, so let me continue. So after we talk about there is a generic map out the dark clock logits as a function of the confinement scale. So then we later on I will talk about the detection ability. I will talk about it in general. But now let me
actually what I was wondering about was structure formation. I mean, you're strongly interacting.
Oh, I see. So that's easy to answer for this question because for that question, if you think about the interaction or bond dark matter, what you care is a cross section over the mass. It's not just cross section, but you also care about the mass. So because those objects they are heavy, the cross section over the mass is many orders of magnitude smaller than just a simple particle put some cross section. So that's why. From the large scale structure, that's all small scale structure, the effect is very small.
Okay. Yeah. So in the previous example, so since you are talking about first order phase transition, you will produce gravitational waves that
yes.
I saw you
yes.
through the water. So this will also reduce the parameter space, or is it relevant?
I will show you one slide about those. Gravitational wave, but the simple answer is there's still large uncertainty because we're talking about a strongly interacting theory. So in a sense, when we calculate the first order gravitational wave and the strength of the transition, there is a wider range. And some range, in optimistic way, you can say there may be some chance to be discovered or measured by future gravitational.
But the first thing that should matter is what is the energy scale of associated to these guys.
That's right.
Which will place or not observable, say, at PTA. Is a potential background of gravitational waves.
Mm.
And if the energy scale is similar to the lambda QCD of the real QCD, it should be around PPA scale.
Oh, yes.
And now the question is the strength.
Right.
And I'm sure there has to be some regime to put the constraint, but I was wondering how relevant that is, if relevant at all. You know? If you have considered that.
I think my simple answer is like we don't have a trustable calculation
okay.
for this question. That's my first answer. But even though I will show some parameter mapping, but I still take it as a grain of salt because it's a Lambert value of Felix for the.
Yeah. But this it could be very relevant because you know once SKA
right.
Really operates,
yes.
you
yes.
open up a lot of sensitivity and
yes.
it could be.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yes, yeah. I totally agree with that interplay of dark matter search versus gravitational wave for this type of first order phase transition generator. Okay.
Is there any mechanism to produce such dark QCD from reheating from optimization? Because then probably in photon should be kind of Higgs field coupled to whatever. Simultaneously, somehow to our standard model and to the dark QCD.
Yes.
Is there any discussion of that?
No, not to that detailed level, but generically I would say that probably you just talk about a specific decay branching ratio about, say, you have some inflaton, how you couple the capital standard mode sector, how they couple to a dark sector. And then you may need to put some different coupling strings to reheat a different sector differently, for example.
Right.
So my guess, there may be some way to...
If you do FF dual coupling of an axial type inflaton of this QCD sector, you will have a superb production in reheating. This has been a study for generic FF dual gauge fields coupled to... It's very easy to extract.
Yeah, very good point. So I'm not sure when. Let me continue. Okay. So let me talk about another type of microscopic dark matter with energy density of electroweak scale. Okay. So for this one, that's kind of last week we already have several discussion about the cuboid and the type of object, right? So here, just in case you're not working on this cuboid, I just give you a very very simple update or a refresh about what is cuboid. So the cuboid has a long history, and that's first studied by TDME and collaborators for no reason, probably just like classic equations. And but you can also check that in the potential they write down in the TDME earlier paper, you can argue that there are lots of fine-tuning, and there are some, for somehow, at that moment, their philosophy is different, so they don't care about the justification for the potential. But later on, Coleman also wrote some simpler story about the cuboid. So what is that? Basically, you think about it, there is complex scalar. So first, there is U1 symmetry, U1x or U1 this scalar symmetry, so you write down some, so let's think about a single field, single phi field, which is a complex scalar, you write down some potential. Keep in mind that this potential is non-trivial because there is a phi square, there is 1 minus phi square square. So that means there is a phi to the 6th power. So this is a non-remitable potential and give you some non-trivial structure. So you have two minimum, for example. So you have the global minimum here. There is some metastable minimum, for example. So the statement is very similar to the quark Luggett I was talking about. So you could have some specific state instead of living in the global minimum, but sitting in the metastable minimum. And you can check what is the again the energy per quantum number here will be this U15 quantum number, and you can check that some state sitting here will be have a lower energy per quantum number state, and very similar to the quark Luggett story, right? So this is another like a cosmological separation of the vacuum of the phases. For example, you can still use the first order, for example, to produce some state sitting in the metastable vacuum instead of in the global vacuum. So that's why there is a very similarity between the quark Luggett discussing and also the Kubo discussing, at least from the first order phase transition production, early universe production mechanism. Okay, so let me come back to this Kubo. So eventually we're doing like a classical physics here. So you put some, you parameterize the field with some exponential I omega t, and then there is a phi r as a function of spatial part, and you can calculate the charge, Loisel charge, and after you're doing that, you assume there is some fixed box, and with a step profile, and step function type of profile, you can justify that later, and then you can have the energy of the state to be, there is the phi dot part, right, phi dot times phi, or phi partial t phi part, and then there is the potential part, because you are in the metastable vacuum, so you cast the energy, because it's not in the lowest vacuum energy, so the vacuum energy is a cast, you increase your energy. And then you can minimize this with respect to the volume, and calculate what is the energy, then you get like twice of the U over phi square. So eventually what you are talking about is, I need to scan all the possible regime in my potential, and I look for where is the lowest the potential value over phi square eventually. Okay, so that will be the point you will have the lowest energy per quantum number state. Okay, so now let's come back to this kind of toy example of this non-remitable potential. You have this potential, you can plot what is this potential over phi square, for example, and you will find that this metastable vacuum part point will be the lowest U over phi square, and you will justify that is the lowest energy per baryon per quantum number state, and that will justify if you can have some state there, long topological soliton, that will be the stable state even at quantum level, because that is lowest energy, just from energy point of view, that is lowest energy state. And generically, its energy will be proportional to charge times some intrinsic property of the potential. So some typical scale of the potential, that will be the energy density, and that will be the counting of the mass. And so this is, I call this is a more like a toy example. This type of single field, non-remitable potential will be like a toy example. So you need UV complete that. But I will show you that for two field, then you can have some renormalizable, much complete. You know the UV physics, and you know the whole story of the potential. Okay, so that brings me to the simplest dark matter model we can think about. In a sense, like I have this dark matter phi, right? I have a Higgs, so that's the simplest way we can think about how dark matter interacting with Higgs. With the standard model sector. So this is the simplest one. Everything is renormalizable. So there is a Higgs potential. We know the full structure. And then there is this portal company, call it lambda phi h, and phi dagger phi. And so there is a, ordinarily we have this Higgs portal. We can calculate thermoregulator abundance. We can calculate direct detection. We can calculate indirect detection. All kinds of constraints can show up. Just simple answer, generically, for this simplest Higgs photon model, generically, most of the parameter space, thermal parameter space has been excluded. Okay. So, but the point is like you, to our surprise, you can have a very, very simple Lagrangian But this Lagrangian will tell us that dark matter may not be in that boring particle state, like dark matter particle state, but could be in some non-topological soliton state, and also may not be in the electroweak symmetry breaking vacuum, maybe in the electroweak unbroken vacuum. So there are some interplay between this Phi field and the Higgs field. Okay.
Why does Phi not have a mass or a quartic term?
Oh, I will talk about, we can add that, does not change anything. We, in the calculation, we talk about that. And there is one more term I ignore, which is the safe interaction of the dark matter, which is a phi dagger phi. And I will also discuss what's the effect of that, for example, for the property of the this cubo or long topological state. So that's exactly kind of detailed calculation we can perform.
But Yang, I'm sorry for the naive question, but on the plot that you had,
yes.
I can't quite see the vertical axis. What is that?
That's the coupling strength of this for the coupling
strength. Which is lambda versus m.
Yes, which is the sum of mass. And so here, here they treat as independent part of mass. For instance, there will be some bare mass to decouple the part of mass.
Okay. So,
but just to generate messages, there are lots of studies about that. Okay. So eventually, what will be the calculation? So you have this simple Lagrangian simple potential. So you have this phi field, dark matter state. You put some exponential I omega t. So you say that is some oscillating field. And then the Higgs, you make it time independent, but with some non-trivial profile. And you derive the classical equation for motion for two fields. They couple together through this cortical, the portal coupling, for example. So you put some boundary condition. For example, in the spherical, so we are doing everything in the spherical coordinate. So when the outside, say, large radius region, so we are thinking about some localized region, there is some profile for the scalar field and also for the Higgs field, right? So the scalar field at a far infinity should be zero because we are talking about the localized region, right? But the Higgs wave at a far infinity should be our ordinary vacuum. Right. So that's the boundary condition. So so you can solve this. You can doing some negative numerical like a double shooting to get the answer for any fixed omega, for example. Yes.
Sorry, just to understand what is the context. Like somehow we've reheated the universe. There is all these guys there, and then you are producing a configuration from the distribution of the particles of these guys. Or,
so the, you mean the production mechanism?
What I mean is, how do you arrive to this configuration that you are setting up with those different conditions?
Okay, so here I'm just, sorry. So here I first want to talk about the property of this object first, which is independent of the production mechanism.
Okay. So the object already exists, you are putting just the right condition for the object to be there, and then you see how it evolves.
I see what I mean. So what I mean is, like here I'm talking about a potential state. So now let's come back to the quark locator. So basically, here I want to first calculate what is my energy per baryon mass first. That's independent of how I get into that state, right? You see what I mean? So later on we'll discuss and how you can get to that. Okay. So it's just a classical differential equation. You solve that and you get some generic property like the following. So let's look at the some charge is large, which is a solid line, Q equals to whatever, 500, for example, large enough. And you can see that the profile of the dark matter, the phi field, will be like there's some inner core, then there is just drop, there's drop will be like exponential. And the Higgs field will be, at the inner region, will be approximately zero, and grow into the electroweak wave, for example. So you may be wondering why is that, for example, if you go back to the Higgs effective mass, right? Look at this mass term. And the Higgs mass defined here is already negative, right? So, but you can see that when you have the phi field become large in some region, and that has opposite contribution to the effective Higgs mass. So in instance, you flip the Higgs mass, you make it from negative to positive, then the Higgs wave will prefer to be zero instead of some non-zero. So that's why there is that kind of interesting interplay. When you have the cubo or this state, dark matter state to be large density, the Higgs prefer to be zero. So what does this mean? That means this is specific, very, very simple Higgs portal dark matter model give us a potential long topological cubo or whatever state. Inside of this dark matter state, the electroweak is unbroken. Okay. So, so this is one non-trivial state. And so this state and the potential can also give us chance if it's correct. Chance is very low for any dark matter models. But if it is correct, so basically that give us not just prob dark matter, also prob the Higgs potential, if you think about it. And that of course can construct the Higgs not in the local or global minimum, doing quantum excitation for that, but also prob the bigger field regime of the Higgs. And, yes?
So are you considering particular Q, or are these just to...
This is just for demonstration, okay, for this purpose. So here, keep in mind, I treated the bare mass of the dark matter, and also the self-interaction of the dark matter to be zero, just trying to for the simplest calculation one can perform. And then there are some small charge, for example, then small charge, the interplay is a little bit weaker, so you don't have that much, but still you can see there are some...
Is there a critical charge where it goes to zero?
Yes, that's this slide, immediate next slide, so which is the calculation we can perform. So what we are calculating, you can see that for fixed charge, here we concentrate on small charge because we want to talk about the Schrödinger charge. And you can see there are two branches of the solution for fixed charge. So this orange branch, that quote-unquote is not quantum stable, and but there is a blue branch that is quantum stable. Why? Because you calculate the cubeball state minus Q times the free particle, dark matter free particle mass. So if this is negative, that means the cubeball state is a lower energy per charge than free particle state. So by definition, if you get into this state, that will be the stable state. Right. So you can see that for this specific portal company, and that matched to some charge to be 19.5 around that point.
But is this company not a strongly coupled system?
So the perturbative should be 4 pi. So 4 pi is the non-perturbative region. Mm. Okay, so this is marginal. Not a marginal, but still can you turn to perturbation, 3 over 4 pi. That is the expansion for this couple. Okay, so in a large Q emitter, then you can have some simple scaling. You have the charge proportion to radius to the fourth power, and you have the mass proportion to radius cubic. So this is like a piping up of the matter, and so this mass versus radius. But you can see the charge is increased. Okay, so that's the first exercise calculation. So now come back to Scott's question. We can also add the bare dark matter mass. We can add this cortical coupling. So that just become more calculational, complicated. But in general, we can do the following. Basically, you can do some simplified calculation, become a single field calculation in the approximation sense. In sense, if the field value is less than the bare Higgs mass, you say you get some non-trivial wave for Higgs, and otherwise the Higgs wave is zero, and you can substitute the Higgs using this condition back into the potential, so that will become a single effective dark matter potential. Right. So that potential will be non-trivial, and then this will be like a simple differential equation. And the Coleman's cubeball paper also pointed out that you can understand this type of equation using like a 1D particle description by changing the radius to time. And so the story is the following. You can think about there is that differential equation, and this effective potential where is drawing here. So basically what you are doing, so you put some field value at earlier time equals to zero, and you put some specific field value, and you let it roll down, and there's some friction, so that will slow down. And you want to shoot a specific height here such that that object will stay at zero for infinite amount of time. And so that's kind of the shooting one can perform. But you can also see from this plot, once you decrease this omega bar, whatever, this frequency, and push that to some critical or boundary frequency, then you can suppose this height and that height are the same, right? So that basically you need to have this cubeball stay or this field value stay at this specific value for a very, very long time and to two integral down, because this potential and that potential, they are the same, and you take a very long time, and if you think about the very long time, this is a fraction term, so now you are doing particle, so you change the r to time, so very long time you can kind of downgrade or decrease the fraction term, and so therefore you will have a very very large profile as a function, a large radius once you push to this threshold boundary omega. So which is a very nice interpretation, but numerically we can also calculate, and in terms of the profile of the cube as a function for the radius, when you decrease this omega bar from like 160 to 151, you can continue till whatever the 147, and if you push it to the 147, this will be infinitely large radius, and once you increase this profile, increase the radius, you also increase the charge, right? So, but I want to show you one interesting thing about this is like you here we added the dark matter self interaction and that flattened out the profile. So I just want to show you this profile versus the previous profile when the self interaction is zero. So when self interaction is zero, you have some core structure, and so the density is much higher in the core region. But once you add the self interaction, you flatten out the core, and so this is another kind of two types of BEC, and basically, and when you have the self interaction become very very zero, small, you can have the core density to be arbitrary high, and the charge versus the radius will be r to the 4. The mass is still the same, but the self interaction will flatten out, so you cannot go arbitrary high density, and then the inner region the density is fixed, is more like a step function. So that's kind of some understanding of the cubo property.
But here your heats would in that case decay into this dark matter, no? Because of this quartic coupling, if you set then this H to sit in the electric vacuum, then it's through the quartic coupling. If I expand, right, then I will get a cubic vertex.
It's not linear because it's at zero. You are staying in the heat.
No, but if now it's not at zero, right?
So heat.
No, but now. Today.
But today. It's inside this object, it's at zero.
No, I'm not talking about this object. I'm talking just this Lagrangian is there, right? So now electric is broken.
Okay.
So this H like H is just this.
So that. Come back to your previous question about that. This coupling to be three. Okay. When this coupling is three, the dark matter is heavier than one half of the Higgs mass.
Okay.
So there is no decay.
Okay.
That's a real question. Okay.
So if you go to a regime where you're really large in the size of the this ball, then essentially your surface has no curvature, so it would be very flexible compared to deformations away from spherical symmetry, and you would have probably a fragmentation channel where this thing would go, make a pin shape, and then reconnect, and the smaller things are now not stable anymore. So how
I think to answer your question, my naive guess is like a spherical configuration will be the lowest energy per charge state.
Yes. But by epsilon amount, like imagine for example mercury ball, or water ball on a flat thing, right? Surface tension is what keeps it together. But it is actually quite common to see small droplets being spherical, but the big ones will have arbitrary shape. Energetically, it's almost it doesn't cost anything for them to bend, because it's almost flat, so the bending energy is actually zero essentially, right? So this probably is quite easy to fragment, and then I'm not sure what happens.
I think to answer this question, I probably need to first study some non-spherical configuration. What's the energy? What's the energy difference? I see what it means. We have not.
You don't need to do that. You can just do perturbations.
You mean on yes, yeah, in principle.
I think it's you haven't talked about formation mechanism, but the fact that this becomes largely homogeneous, probably the same instability that would form these objects, because now you have a homogeneous configuration again, the same instability was set in, would probably break up the thing. So it wouldn't last for, I don't think you can extend it to be very large. Usually it tends to, as Andre was saying, it tends to break down.
Yeah, The formation I was still will use the first order phase transition type of formation, which is not that homogeneous. So you maybe form some non-spherical configuration first, and then the question is how that further.
Yeah, usually, these things do develop perturbations, and if you make them too large, they tend to break up.
Okay.
But I don't know about this particular model, but other cases where you get these flat top configurations, they tend to, when you make them sufficiently large, they tend to break up.
Yes.
And also, can you talk about coupling the Higgs to gauge fields?
Yes.
At the origin, in the core, on the cuboid, the Higgs has zero back, which means that these gauge fields will be masses, and they might carry energy away. So they might be easily produced.
So the carry energy away, that's because there is conserved quantum number, and so everything should be for that fixed quantum number, and to discuss that. But indeed, inside of this object, the electric wake could be unbroken, or at least approximately unbroken. So there will be some interesting effect actually. So in essence, the spheron will be active inside of this dark matter ball, and there are some interesting. Okay. Let me continue. So we talk about here, we talk about here, and we talk about here. So now let's talk about formation. So since at the beginning I wrote about the quark ligands formation from first order phase transition. So here I just need to demonstrate where is the first order phase transition comes from, and that's become like a little bit of well known stuff. So basically, for the Higgs photo dark matter, the portal interaction, portal coupling can also generate a Kolmogorov-Weinberg potential for the Higgs potential, and that can also make the electric wave phase transition first order. Okay. So we can went through that standard calculation, and you can ask what is the phase transition temperature as a function of the coupling. Here you can see the coupling, we really go into 4 pi now, right? So, but even though we can concentrate on small coupling region, and this is another qualification about what's the Hall strength of the first order phase transition in sense of the wave over the temperature, the phase transition temperature, and if the coupling is large, then you have a much stronger first order phase transition. And but here I just want to say that this specific model is also nice because it can generate a first order phase transition and help you to produce this cuboid state. Okay. So after that, we can estimate what is the mass of this electric symmetric dark matter ball, for example. So again, we need to make some UV assumption about the abundance or symmetrical abundance. So you assume that there's dark matter or symmetry. Even though we don't need to necessarily make that assumption, since if it's a symmetric dark matter, then that maybe just reduce the typical size, typical charge for the object. And one can also check that. But to get a larger object, generically we anticipate that to use a symmetric dark matter model is better. And generically, you can estimate what is the number of dark matter particles per Hubble, and how many nucleation sites within Hubble volume. For that type of calculation, to my surprise, is very, very high sensitive to this coupling, in the sense of the strength of the first order phase transition, and to minus 14 power. And I think that's a numerical number. It's not a precise number. Okay.
So that's why you have a three.
Yeah, this is So you can say that if you change it by factor of 2, you change it by 3 or magnitude in terms of the charge of the object, and also the mass will be important. So that's why there is some uncertainty. There's some sensitivity on the model parameter. Okay, so after that, you can estimate what is the generic charge, and will be like 10 to 24, and what is the dark matter, this cuboid type of mass, will be 10 to 26, and the radius will be 10 to 5 inverse GeV. So basically, roughly speaking, like 100 gram and Ångström size. So that's the typical size for this coupling. And so you can say, this is not a huge, not a that microscopic, right? But keep in mind, here we are talking about electric wave scale. And compared to the electric wave scale, this is large. And also this is, I think, large enough to have this radius matter, and which is I can talk about later when I talk about the phenomenological part. But let me talk about one more thing about the abundance of the free particle.
Should I think of that charge as being natural?
You mean this charge?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. If you think about the dark matter and the, if you think about we want to explain the coincidence of dark matter and the ordinary baryon asymmetry. So if you think about it, there's some asymmetric dark matter model, so you will anticipate the generic here on top of the QCD is our electric scale, 100 GeV, right? The ordinary baryon is 1 GeV. The ordinary baryon, you have a symmetry like 10 to minus 9 to 10 to minus 10, right? Here you just choose the symmetry to be 10 to minus 11. So I'm saying that this charge from a symmetric dark matter model point of view is light.
I just meant the 10 to the 24, actually. I always thought that was
That's a very magical number.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So there is one more thing, which is about the free particle. Right. There is still some free dark matter particle. So you can ask the following question: is how? So the simple answer is like because the Q, the charge, the cube with a charge Q can eat a free particle. So that's a simple answer. So you can estimate this kind of ET mechanism, the accumulation of the free particle. You can estimate when this process frees out. And that frees out at a very later time. And you can use that to, you assume they are still in the thermal or chemical equilibrium. And then you can get what is the abundance of the free particle abundance. And the answer is very, very small. And even though this calculation is a very crude estimation, but at least you can say that you form those large cubes, and the free particle they just get trapped by the cube, then increase the cube size, and convert all the free most of the free particle number dark matter number into the cube state, and so there is a mechanism like that, and so that means that if this Naive estimation is correct, which means for this Higgs portal dark matter model and with the first order phase transition, and you anticipate most of the dark matter number is inside this cube state rather than free particle state. So that means that you need to also change the way you search for this type of model. Okay.
Wait, before you move on, did you address the mass transfer defined?
Oh, I did. So for example, so not here. Superficially has a one thing, which is if the mass is zero, then you have omega, the frequency. But if you add the mass, it turns out to be just rescaling. So that's why we call it a U bar. And when you have the bare mass there, and you just absorb that into redefinition of the frequency. So for most of the cases, we are still working on just let me see whether I have any mass term. Yeah. So we are working on the bare mass is still reasonably smaller than the electric weak provided mass. Okay, so that's the most of the parameter space. And when you have this mass to be very, very large, then you maybe change it. You maybe even need a much larger charge to make that stable, for example.
So the current collider bounds are insensitive to this scaling, is that right?
The collider bound, we checked the collider bound, so there should be okay for the.
So what is the sensitivity in terms of the mass?
Oh, basically, when you increase the portal coupling, the dark matter particle mass become heavy, and they become much more difficult to produce pair produce dark matter particle at the collider. So
like,
you know, so
like a five particle.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Because it becomes much heavier than that collider, the phase space to produce that is a PDF or parton distribution function suppressed. And even though your coupling you seems to be like an increase, but the heaviness of the dark matter particle really decreases the cross section a lot. And so there is we checked that there is no.
And the mass is going. What dependence with the bare mass? The phase space oppression that you're talking about, the colliders.
Oh, it's just a quadratic summation. It's a square root of bare mass square plus lambda times electroweak square. So that's the simple.
I see. Yeah. So because lambda is so big.
Because lambda is big. And also, I mean, we can also check a small lambda, but at some point that the company becomes small, you also don't produce. So the collider, yeah, we checked it, there is no, at least in the current HEC collider, there's no way to produce. Okay, let me continue. So yeah, talk about it here. So now talk about the detection. So the detection part, let's first talk about lensing. I think we already talked about in the last discussion about the primordial black hole, but in general, you can also talk about this extended microscopic dark matter. So you can see that the Fenton lensing or the seismic one, we put like a dotted dashed line, means those constraints are not really there because people realize those should not take. So let me just for Schubert or the those micro lensing, we know what is going on, but probably not for those two, right? So mica, which is like people looking for underground mineral, and they check the tracks, some long trivial tracks. They put some etching, like chemical etching, to amplify the tracks, and then they can have some like I forgot like a gram size mica, and those mica can live for like 100 million years, and so that's why you have the exposure. If you think about it, this is a detector, suppose, right, for those object, and the exposure time is extremely long when they use those mica experiment, and so that's why they potentially can probe some mass range, and but you can see that for the dark QCD, that are dark quark nuggets, but it may not have interaction with the ordinary material, right? Because it's just pure dark, so you may just have a gravitational interaction or some high scale generate interaction, so you may not be covered by mica. Only for the standard model QCD quark nuggets, you maybe have a chance to be covered by this, because that has a QCD interaction, so you may be proud of that. But for the electroweak dark matter, that also kind of slightly heavier than the mica problem region. For the seismic, is like people check the like Earth or Moon, the seismic activity. When you have this microscopic dark matter with large interaction with material, so that maybe generate some shock waves or earthquake or moonquake. But that is like there are some lines trajectory. When it passes through, that can penetrate the moon. So that kind of seismic activity is different from ordinary seismic activity, because ordinary seismic is more like from slightly more localized point source and to generate. So people can distinguish those two types of activity. So that's one thing. So this one, I think there's some refined calculation to say, oh, the previous constraint is not there. And also this one has interesting potential future data from Mars. Instance of the Mars, I think last year they start to have the first Mars quake, and so you potentially can wait after they take much longer time, and to also impose or maybe search for some object like that. But has not yet been done. Okay. So for the gravitational lensing, like micro lensing, like what we know that eventually below like 10 to minus 10 or 12 solar mass, like 10 to 22 gram. But a majority of this, at least for the model I'm talking about here, is slightly below that mass range. So you're not really covered by the micro lensing experiments at this moment.
So for the micro, do you know if they what is the uncertainty on the background? Because a very similar idea proposed for proton decay for geochemical searches, and the problem there was that no one knows the background, so that's why it kind of went away. And because if you cannot estimate, so you have this humongous exposure because it has been the material has been there for a long time, but if you do not know how much happened from background, there is no meaningful signal.
Yes and no, because they do have the data, right? The data is zero, the event is zero. They can assume.
I see. So you're saying it's background free.
You, at that moment, you can still impose a constraint on your model by don't care about the background, right? Basically means like the background can also cannot generate one event or a few events, basically, in that moment. You can still impose a constraint. I think that the question you ask is like more like if you do have some events, then how do you deal with it? But not the case for the data analysis that people presented for the model. Okay, so Another one which I will briefly mention, which is gravitational wave, and don't need to go through those detailed calculations, but generically, just depending on the confinement scale, so you maybe can match certain frequency for certain experiments, right? But you can see that depending on whatever the traditional parameter alpha and beta, you need some dashed line, for example, beta over h, which is 10 to 3, which is roughly speaking how fast over the transition phase transition is, and that can cook up with large amplitude. But again, like what I was saying, that for the dark QCD part is a strongly interacting theory, so we can only have some toy model, maybe sigma, linear sigma type of model to calculate some amplitude, but we don't trust that type of calculation. So anyways, just a point. And, okay, so now let me talk about the Dirac detection. And so the Dirac detection, I think, at least for the electroweak density or the QCD, because they are carry the standard model interaction. For those two type of models, I think they have a higher chance to be detected. But this Dirac detection is different from ordinary dark matter Dirac detection in the following sense. Because the mass is large, the flux is very low, so that means you need a very large volume detector to search for it. So that's the first thing different. So just give you some benchmark model. If the dark matter mass is 10 to 21 GeV, the detector is some like a per meter square in the area, and you run that experiment like 10 years, you maybe have some one event, basically. Right? So that means like the you need to require very, very large volume. So another difference, because the cross-section could be large, so you have the QCD interaction cross-section or electroweak wave interacting, the cross-section could be like a geometric cross-section, for example, and that means that when dark matter passes through your detector, you maybe have some multiple scattering. So you will have multiple hits. So you will not just have a single hit, you have a multiple hit. And you can also ask what's the sum of the energy for those multiple hits. If you're doing elastic scattering, an individual deposited energy is still like a 10 keV, so you maybe have some scattering, number of scattering, some efficiency. You still like get a below like a MeV, maybe 100 keV energy. And so the energy is also not large for the elastic scattering. Okay, but one interesting thing, let me come back to this electroweak dark matter model, right? So keep in mind, in the core of the dark matter, the electroweak symmetry is restored. And so what does it mean when it interacts with the nucleus? So that means that the nucleus will get all majority of their mass from QCD. So there are some bare quark mass, bare nuclear mass, which is independent of electroweak scale, but there are also some electroweak symmetry breaking contributed to the nuclear mass, which is some small coupling. If you parameterize into you calculate that like 10 to minus 3, right? So that means that if you think about it, I have a dark matter ball and passing through a detector, but let's get into the frame of the dark matter frame, so that it almost like a nucleus passes through the dark matter. And when the nucleus passes through dark matter, and in some region, the nucleus mass is slightly changed. Okay, so that would be the perfect like a quantum mechanical homework calculation, right? The spherical, square well, and potential, and you are looking for the scattering calculation of that. So you can go through this. This is a perfect example for textbook calculation. You can apply to the actual research. And you can ask what is the cross-section, and divide it in terms of the geometric cross-section, for example, pi r squared. And if you increase the radius large enough, then there are all kinds of bound states can mediate the elastic scattering. You know, so that's why those wiggles. But once your radius is large enough, then you basically saturate it to some like a geometric cross-section, like twice of pi r squared. And here, and once you do that, you can see that you can check the nucleus, you can check the oxygen, and both are saturated to some twice of the geometric area. So generically, if your radius is large enough, accumulate many, many bound states, you sum all those bound states together, you saturate it to geometric cross-section. So that's the answer. And then you can apply that to the elastic scattering of the multiple heats. And looking for like some neutrino type of experiments, like Juno or Borg-Sino, for example, they have a Schrödinger energy to be below MeV, capital MeV, so they maybe have a chance to to prop some parameter regime, and you can, they can extend that to like a 10 to 23 or 10 to 22 GeV mass range, right? So that's, this is just pure for elastic scattering. So that means like you need to focus on certain experiments, very special experiments which they have lower threshold less than 1 eV to detect. Okay, so that's very specific. But also recently we found like you can also do another type of detection of this this dark microscopic dark matter, which is you can have nucleus enter into this dark matter ball, and the nucleus get bonded by the dark matter and plus a photon, because nucleus carry photon, right? So they, sorry, nucleus carry charge, so they can emit a photon. So this is like a, like think about electron proton form hydrogen plus photon, right? So this is very similar like a radioactive capture process, except that we apply that to neutron or nucleus capture here. And you can estimate what's the binding energy, you can get a map, and you can also perform some detailed calculation. You can derive what's the formula of the individual state, the radioactive capture cross section. You can get the formula. And then there is a kind of interesting calculation here. We found it's interesting. You know, so ordinary in hydrogen, we're just doing dipole approximation. Why? Because the photon energy for that case is smaller than the Bohr momentum, and it's smaller than the, so that's why you have a hierarchical, because alpha is small, and there is some expansion you can do. For this case, if you want to do the dipole, then you need to make sure the energy, the photon energy, which is related to the binding energy, and the times the radius to be small, that is a dipole limiter. The dipole limiter for this case can be only extended to the radius to be order 10 inverse GeV. In that region, the dipole limiter works, and you can calculate, you can get some cross-section calculation. But when you have the radius to be large, say above 10 to 100 GeV, then you need to go beyond the dipole approximation, and which also we explicitly calculate. But for this regime, there is another nice limit, because the dark matter is non-relativistic, so the initial momentum is also small. But the initial momentum is larger than, sorry, it's smaller than Q, but it's still small, give you another, we can call it a low energy limit. And the low energy limit calculation, you can apply this to this formula, which we have not found any, this, all this is quantum, simple quantum mechanics, but we have not found any textbook like a formula. So we derive our own formula for this type of calculation. So that can extend to larger, slightly larger radius and beyond the dipole approximation. And you can also calculate what's the radioactive capture cross-section over the elastic cross-section ratio and for different radius. And you can see there is also always some oscillation, because there are certain bounded states formed. But eventually, they are just like a 2 orders of magnitude lower, just generic radius will be lower. Then you can get this ratio. And we can also do some cross-check, and in a sense, in the nuclear theory, and the people also do the capture, the neutron capture by nucleus. So that would be almost exactly the similar thing. And so you can see that in some intermediate momentum of the neutron momentum, for which will be the K for this case, and you have some oscillating, you take the ratio of the radioactive capture cross section over elastic. But once you over, or in a sense, the radius, for our case, way of thinking, the radius get large enough, you accommodate too many bounded state, you saturate. For elastic scattering, you saturate the geometric cross-section. For radiative capture, you also saturate. And you take the ratio, then it becomes some simple ratio. And that can give us a handle to how to estimate the radiative capture cross-section for the dark matter and the nucleus entering into that. And after that type of calculation, then we can present what is the another type of signal, which is the dark matter passing through your detector. And each point, you can also count in the generated photon. That photon energy, because it related to the binding energy, that photon energy could be much larger, could be 10 MeV, could be more energetic. And so therefore, there are more dark neutrino type of experiments. They can potentially detect those high energy photon than the previous one I was talking about, just purely elastic. So that brings this kind of a busy plot, which tell you that all kinds of neutrino detectors and how they can probe this this radioactive capture cross section for different dark matter mass. And we also and you can see that QCD energy density will be like this, and have some chance to be probed by those neutrino experiments, but electroweak one can also be probed, but you know, slightly different ways, like less likely way. And we're also kind of a work in progress with some experimentalists and trying to start to use those neutrino detector to really map out to search for this object.
By the way, talking about radiation, there is this one crazy thing, I don't know whether you thought about it or not, maybe not because it's too crazy, but actually if you take this kind of, whatever, let's say it's called Q-ball, right? Inside it has an unbroken electrolytic vacuum, that means that for all electrons and so on, they're all masses, right? But then this thing actually lives in the universe and it actually moves through the universe with a magnetic field. That implies in its whole reference frame, there's an electric field. And clearly, electric field for massless charged particles will create like pairs by Schrödinger, really, really a lot of them, right? Just because inside, if I'm sitting together with this cue ball, let's say, I feel electric field because I'm propagating through, let's say, galactic magnetic field or even extragalactic magnetic field. And these magnetic fields are all over. And needless to say, they're very big around, I don't know, neutron stars and blah, blah, blah. So I will have like huge electric field in my own reference frame. And that implies that I will produce tons of these electron particle pairs. So the question would be then, either they just fly out very quickly, but constantly, by the way, right? That's a bit weird. Or due to their repulsion after that, they just destroy these blobs. And then the whole thing will just disappear. Or, okay, maybe another option is that they're kind of born there, then they, because I think you're still there's probably some residual mass there because the Higgs profile is kind of small, it's kind of almost zero, probably zero at the center, but not entirely zero after that. So maybe after that, these guys, I don't know, introduce some polarization there, or they sort of like dipole moment, or maybe they, I don't know, they collapse inside back, but then they will produce a lot of gammas.
So let me answer in two comments about your question. So the first comment is like the magnetic field, which I'm not, I don't know, maybe there's some screening effect to get inside of this object, which would not be surprised because of the, you see that your electron can be bounded by this object, right? Electron is massless inside, but it's still relativistic, can be bounded by this object. So I would think that there will be some interplay with also the electromagnetic interaction. So that's one thing which we need to think through. So another question is, so far, when I think about the inner side, right? So I say the Higgs wave is zero, right? So far, I'm saying. But one effect has been ignored. What is the QCD phase inside? So if the QCD phase, what it means is like the QCD phase, suppose still confining, I mean, suppose the electroweak is a wave is zero in the star model, QCD is still confining break electroweak.
Yeah, yeah.
We know that, right? So that means that like, there's still some tiny electroweak wave, but it's much suppressed for the purpose we discussed here, but it will be relevant for the question you're asking just now. So that's another interesting.
Interesting. So there could be effectively masses for electrons coming from somewhere else.
From QCD electro break the electroweak symmetry. Right. So that would be much smaller, 3 orders of magnitude smaller.
Then it becomes actually even more interesting because then it would imply that you need to compare what are the basically biggest magnetic fields. Mm. What is the potential velocity of this guy there?
I see.
And then see what is the effect of the electric field inside.
I see.
And then we just apply the Schrödinger formula and we know what how much of them are produced in the core. Then of course production is not infinite because I don't know how to calculate Schrödinger production if there's no mass. If there is mass, we know how to produce it, then we will know the rate. And then the question would be only what after that happens with them? Either they produce dipole or they annihilate inside produce gammas. And probably they try to kind of stop, most probably, this stagnant. And that case basically produces pair collapses, radiates gammas, and then the velocity decreases, right? Something like a friction, in a sense.
I see. So basically.
Or I don't know, maybe they, this, you know, repulsion between electron positron would be enough to just split it into, like, let's say, into pieces and pieces.
Yeah, we can discuss more.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, seems interesting.
I just said it because I didn't forget it twice.
Okay, yeah.
But, I mean, I think what Yang was saying, Alex, I mean, wouldn't, just like in the superconductor, you don't allow the magnetic fields to enter into the superconductor. The Q-ball is kind of like that, right? So you will not, it will be the Meissner effect. You won't want to go away.
But it's different. It's basically, the QCD condensation breaks the electroweak symmetry, but not for the U1. E and M, so you don't break U1 E and M. You break the electroweak symmetry. But
you think the electromagnetic fields will propagate? Will travel inside the Q ball if you're passing through it? Will not just screen?
So which will be different?
So if it's the phi field, which goes on that, then the Meissner
effect
goes okay.
Right.
Whereas if it's the Higgs field itself, which has a zero F, then the gauge fields are masked.
So one of them will. Okay, I see. So one of them screens and the other one doesn't. Okay, I see. So they're two screen ones.
So maybe first to conclude, not too much, anyway, just read it. So basically, there are more dark matter models you can make microscopic, and the long trivial phase transition, and also can have the dark matter state in a different vacuum compared to the ordinary vacuum. So that's kind of another interesting thing. Maybe we can use dark matter to learn some other vacuum in our electroweak sector, for example, or QCD sector, for example. And for the two models I was talking about, there's dark QCD, there's just too many, you don't have any constraint, you don't have any benchmark, you just map out the parameter space. But for the Higgs model dark matter, I just feel like I have more passion about that because it's such a simple model, such a simple Lagrangian, and you get some non-trivial state, and just feel like maybe there are more things can be done, and also maybe there's some other production mechanism, like that was Mustafa, and also Dan was working on. Maybe there's some misalignment of production of the cubo, for example, right? So just to see how to map out the generic size for another different type of production mechanism. And but in, also this has a very interesting experimental phenomenological problem, and I can see that in the there will be some experimental study about those objects in the future. Okay, thank you.
I do want to kind of come back a bit to the discussion of stability, and there were some comments. But so, for example, in the case of Suzy cubo, so for example, the comment about the flat top potentials that Mustafa was mentioning. But this is of course for oscillons. But for oscillons, they do not hear U1, so of course they're not stable. But in case for cubo, for example, in Suzy cubo, since there's coupling to other fermions, these quarks, limiting swan, there is some Q, it is not stable. But if you do not couple to anything, if you just conserve the charge, then it's absolutely stable, even for the big one. So I'm not sure that these comments would apply, but in your particular case, you couple, you have a Higgs, and for the Higgs, you also couple to the loops or everything else. And so I'm wondering about the stability and at what.
So I think I think the answer is in the Lagrangian I write down, the dark matter number is exact symmetry, right? But that's global symmetry. You may be wondering about some Planck separation operator, so to decay away. But I think for the question that question we were talking about, it's still you have conserved the quantum number, but maybe you have some dissociation, in a sense, you have a charge Q split into Q over 2, twice of Q over 2, for example.
Well, but for example, the coupling to the Higgs that you have, I mean, it is a charge conserving coupling.
That's right.
So
yes, yeah. For the Lagrangian I'm talking about, there is no decay. There is no, energetically, I can say this cubo state is the lowest energy per charge state.
Even coupling through loops to the right things?
Because if all the coupling is through that portal coupling, there is no way. It doesn't matter whether you do loop calculation or not. You still have doesn't matter. So once if this is the only coupling to the standard model, and that conserve the symmetry, there is no way that it will be broken. Okay. So you can only talk about this quantum gravity. Okay.
Yeah, well, another thing is if the electron-positron pairs are produced, they probably can compensate for this pretty probably small electric field inside if you just align it like this, right? At some moment the production will stop because it will create the opposite directed electric field.
That's right.
Yes. Then you create kind of dark matter with electric dipole, right? Electric dipole moment. Then, on the other hand, things with electric dipole moment moving around some objects will create normal radiation, right? So then, what would be this dark matter would be able to radiate normal gammas, whatever. That's because this dipole will change with time because the electromagnetic fields change with time, right? Whatever. They're very homogeneous and like strange.
Yes.
So if the thing moves, and not to talk if it moves around them of like big like holes or magnetars or things with magnetic field, then it will start radiating you. Maybe, I don't know. It sounds actually very, very interesting.
I think there is a balance. Basically, you pay some price to generate U plus minus. But if you want to do the screening, you also want to produce a certain amount of those E plus minus pair,
exactly.
Then you form some whatever multiple moment to downgrade the
magnetic. Exactly. Basically kill the external electric field. So maybe at some moment, of course there's another option, I don't know, it depends whether this block can really accommodate these charges.
Right.
On the other hand, maybe if it cannot, then the things will just need to be annihilated inside or fly out somehow. But it's probably just a question of the value of this electric field.
Well, I mean, this would be very rare, right? I mean, it's only very close to this neutron star surface that you'd get a sufficiently strong electric field to even have this kind of flare production.
I don't know, because if masses are zero, then the Schrödinger is very strong effect, if masses are zero. Of course, if there is a tiny fraction of Higgs well inside, then one should compare immediately, right? But it's a question, if they're completely massless, then it's a very strong effect. If there's like a massless supersede, then it's less strong. Then it's just a question of comparing what is the typical speed, mass, you know, then you can boost and find what's electric field and so on. But the point is there is lower threshold actually for that, because we have V and out of known V you will get E.
They're not that like presumably, right? Because in the real world, I mean for physical electron ants, I mean it has never been observed because we can't achieve electric fields that are large enough. And you're only talking about three orders of magnitude lighter, so in the fields that are out there in the galaxy are really weak.
No, sure, but I thought if the Higgs potential is just exactly zero, then they're...
Oh, but here, he was pointing out that the QCD also breaks the electroweak symmetry, so there will still be a mass for the electrons that isn't... I mean, it's smaller, but not that much smaller. I mean, I don't think that the magnetic fields in the galaxy will be anything.
Very close to the neutron star surface.
Neutron star, okay.
But then the event rate would be so small for it to...
So then most probably that would imply that there's all that matter around this object, or maybe some years.
Interesting.
But how to calculate this mass of let's say, electrons appearing through the breaking of electroweak supersede?
So the way, if I turn on the lights, and so basically you say I have a Q left,
Q right,
say I have this to be QCD,
yeah.
Q this, but I also have a Higgs Q left and Q right, you cover company, right, plus the ordinary Higgs potential, right. So you plus those two together, you will get some Higgs field, then general gravity is also like lambda QCD, because there will be some tidal pole operator contributed from the condensation. After Higgs gets a wave, you can have electron mass.
Right. Okay.
So that will be the way.
Okay. Yeah, but probably it's not the Higgs.
Yeah, for this complex scalar Higgs portal model, you've taken into account the electric precision measurements and stability of potential. There are all these phenol constraints that people put in for this Lagrangian to constrain lambda, and so all of that's been taken into account, right?
Electroweak precision, Probably that's not that important because this is a singlet, first of all. Right. For the vacuum stability, indeed.
The three precision measurements are important. I mean, for if you're just talking about a complex scalar extended heat sector, then you have to make sure.
Come back to the vacuum stability. This, roughly speaking, this ending point of this coupling will be like a, you increase the coupling, you generate a comovable potential for Higgs. So you add it together over the tree-level Higgs, then you have two minimum you can compare, and that there is some boundary, then you cannot go beyond that. Otherwise we're not in the ordinary case, we're not in the electric vacuum. So that has been taken into account.
Any ideas with, are you thinking of doing some kind of dye production complementarity, because that Lagrangian is also, you know.
I asked a question. I think to search for this type of dark matter at collider is challenging, because of pair-produce, you have some radiation, right?
Initial. So the opposite. So opposite. You produce phi and then phi gives the dark Higgs.
But the only way to produce phi at collider is through Higgs. Right. So, yeah.
Last question before lunch. If not, if everyone interested, we meet at 12:15, and let's thank you.